For the fans, by the fans, welcome to the Non-League Football Show. I am Tim Fuel, still hoping for a quick return to the hot seat here by Caroline Barker. But alas, it's me, and so like any sensible caretaker manager, I've surrounded myself with some stalwarts of the game and of the show. First up, former manager at AFC Wimbledon, Hendon, Northwood, Harrow, Borough and everywhere else, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening.
And alongside him, well, at least in the same audio space anyway, is presenter and commentator at FC United Radio, it's Swampy. Good evening, Swampy.
Yeah, good evening, Tim. Good evening, Dave. Hope you're both well.
Yeah, good, mate.
Yeah, it's another week has flown past, so welcome back. I promise I've not locked Miss Barker up in the cupboard. She will be back, hopefully before my voice gives up as well this evening. But let's move on quickly. Let's crack on. It's FA Cup weekend ahead. It's a third qualifying round, and who better to help us preview the ties than our very own at FA Cup Fact Farm, Mr. Phil Annetts. Good evening, Phil.
Evening, Tim. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, I've managed to get you all on the line at the same time, so I'm doing quite well so far. Third qualifying round, no new names in the hat this time round, but from that last round, were there any big surprises? I know there were certainly a few that popped up for me.
Well, there's quite a few Step 5 clubs managed to get through the last round, so it's always good to see those that started off at the beginning of August still going on as we get into the end of September, and hopefully at least one of them might make it even further to maybe face a National League side in the next round.
Yeah, and of those clubs that sort of maybe stole a few headlines in that second qualifying round, you know, South Shields beat Darlington, but they've probably set themselves up for possibly the tie of the round, haven't they?
Yeah, they're facing York City in what's been dubbed as the Non-League Super Cup. It's the first time that the current holders of the vase and the trophy will actually meet together in the following season's FA Cup. So it's got a lot to riding on it, and their FA Cup histories couldn't be a bit more different, really, because South Shields are here for the first, well, equaling their best ever. A nice little win over York would take them into the fourth qualifying round for the first time, whereas York City, obviously, lots of history as a league club, but never actually been knocked out in this round since about 92 years ago was the last time. So it would be a momentous shock if South Shields actually took the victory this time round.
Yeah, not chosen by the BBC for tie of the round. They've gone for Ashton Athletic and Chorley, so that's going to be the Saturday lunchtime live on the web. But would that have been your choice?
Well, there's a couple of things there. One is that they did say that they would feature 12 different clubs throughout the six rounds, and as South Shields has been on already, I think that's why they've not chosen that this time around. In terms of Ashton Athletic and Chorley, I think it's a great tie. I mean, there's three or four where you've got Step 5 against Step 2, and any one of them would have been a good choice for me. I think Ashton Athletic are in this round for the first time. They're doing extremely well, or for the second time, sorry. They're doing extremely well. Probably regarded as the smallest club left in the competition. So I think it's a great choice by the BBC.
And Swampy, your club have got quite a big tie as well in this round.
Yeah, I mean, the same division as Stockport County, but the history of Stockport County is everyone knows about. And, you know, they only 12, 15 years ago, they were a championship team, beating Man City, beating other top draw teams. It's going to be an interesting tie for FC. We're currently third from bottom, had a good win at the weekend against, at the time, six from top, Tamworth. But I'd just like to go back to the tie we're just talking about, the York City South Shields. I mean, South Shields, yes, certainly the first time at this level, and York City have got a great history. But for South Shields to go to Darlington and do a great job against Darlington, I actually predicted, I do another show as well on the Northern Premier League, and I predicted, and I'm going to predict it again, I think actually South Shields will win that game against York City. I think they are a quality outfit, and they're flying the flag for the North East with Blyth going out quite early on, which is quite unknown for them because they've obviously had a great tradition in the FA Cup. But it's going to be a great tie, and I understand exactly why they're not on the television this time. I think the Ashton versus Chorley is a great tie, and it's the first time, in fact, that Chorley have ever been on national television. And I know from a football club perspective, they're very much looking forward to it. And again, the FA Cup, even at these early rounds, I mean, these are the exciting rounds, and obviously one more game after this, that's when you're really, really getting to the nitty-gritty where you're going to play against maybe league opposition. But for those teams that are in around it at this moment in time, it's great to be involved in it. It's a great, great competition, and it gets the butterflies going. On Saturday morning, I'll be getting up. I live in Stockport. I'm only, you know, 3 miles from, well, 2.5 miles from the Stockport County's ground, Edgeley Park, and I'll be getting the bus up there, and I'll be enjoying commentating and looking forward to a great game, as every other club will be doing in the in this round of the FA Cup. So good luck to absolutely everybody.
Yeah, but Swampy, sorry, Phil, I was just going to say to Swampy, if South Shields beat York, there won't be a bigger upset in the rest of the competition this year.
No, there won't be in the fact that the both teams are so, well, are far apart in divisions. But listen, honestly, Dave, if you watch South Shields play, they're a Conference North team now. That's how good they are. So for me, it won't be a big upset. It will be in the respect of where the divisions are at the moment in time. But it won't be for me. They're a top draw team. They really are. They're just so good to watch. They're pretty on the eye. They've got a great pitch, great surface. I mean, York, you know, FC went and beat them a couple of weeks, about 3 weeks ago now at that at their place. But, I mean, York have had a good bit of form recently. They did really well to beat Salford away from home. And York will be up for it, no question about it. I mean, Millsy, the manager there, he's got a great pedigree. I just think South Shields on the day, with the quality that they've got, it won't be, for me, a great big shock. In the footballing world, it'll be a big shocker. There probably won't be a bigger shock this season, as you rightly say. But it won't be a great shock to me, in all fairness.
Swampy trying to outdo you on the stats there, Phil. I mean, you are our stat man, our fact man. Any interesting stats coming up for this round that we should be looking out for?
Well, there's a couple of derbies going on that are quite interesting. You've got Eastbourne Borough and Bognor Regis Town. Amazingly, they've never faced each other before. And they're on the south coast. Obviously, you've got Margate and Herne Bay as well. That should be a cracking local derby. They met back in 1970, so that's the last time they met. And I think Margate scraped a 1-0 win that day. So it's a long time to wait for revenge, but I think Herne Bay will be up for it on this game. There's a lot of clubs in this round for the first time, and a lot of clubs looking to make it to the next round for the first time. So this is really the exciting time. It's great to hear the enthusiasm and excitement from Swampy there, you know, with his club. And the FA Cup means so much to clubs at this level. I think if anyone can get through to face a National League side at home in the next round, they're all going to be really happy with that.
Yeah, you see, I mean, you mentioned the passion there. I mean, one thing that I noted was that in that last round, the televised game was Deeping Rangers against Kidderminster Harriers. And despite it being broadcast live on the web, it was still Deeping Rangers' record crowd, I think 696. Yeah. So, it proves that if you give non-league a window, there's people out there that want to go and watch it.
Yeah, there is. I think there's one place that I think there's going to be a lot of focus in the local area. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. I think it's Basford United. It's a team up in Nottingham, and they're facing Kettering Town, one of the better, well-known teams in the competition. But the thing about Basford is that they've had 9 attempts previously to get this far in a competition, and were almost, if they'd lost again in the last round, would have become the record holders at the most times knocked out in the second qualifying round without making it any further. So at the 10th attempt, they've made it through, and I think that's a fantastic story. And they'll have a big test against Kettering, but if they can come through that, that'll be a brilliant day for them.
Well, hopefully there'll be more stories to come. So what about yourself, Phil? Where are you off to this time round?
Well, I've actually put it out to a vote, actually, to people on the Twitter account. And I put four matches down there, and there's actually two that are going neck and neck. And the one at Basford is there, but out in front of the moment is AFC Mansfield. But so by the time this show airs, I'll probably know where I'm going, but it looks like I'm going to Nottingham, whichever way the result goes.
And we hadn't even spoken about that earlier, but you may have led perfectly into our next feature. So I'll give you a final hurrah then, Phil. Where can people find out more about all your stats, all your facts, and find your wonderful website?
Yeah, they can obviously follow me on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File, and I run a little blog called facfacfile.wordpress.com. So, yeah, please do come and join me, and let's fire the FA Cup as it gets into the business end.
And so, as Phil mentioned there, one club in the FA Cup this weekend is AFC Mansfield, a community club founded in only 2012 and currently plying their trade in the Northern Counties East Premier Division. That's Step 5. This weekend, they're hoping for an upset. Visitors Boston United are from Conference North. That's Step 2. And joining us on the line is Chairman of AFC Mansfield, Andrew Saunders, to tell us more. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening.
And I believe you're at the final training session before this game.
We are at the final training session, yeah, and unfortunately the generator has just gone out and the floodlights have just gone out, so that's non-league football for you.
That's not, well, you knew you were broadcasting to the world of non-league and you just wanted to keep the opposition in the dark, did you? That's the way it works.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, before we talk about FA Cup this weekend, for those that don't know, what can you tell us about the founding of AFC Mansfield?
The club was, I founded the club in 2012 with two other guys who were previously directors of Mansfield Town Football Club. And basically, as you know, football, things change in football. And we decided to, form our own club in May 2012.
And I remember, actually, I remember covering the three of you joining Mansfield Town as the Three Amigos, I think was the headline.
Exactly, that's what we were, yes.
Is it still a rivalry with Mansfield Town and AFC Mansfield, or are you just sort of,
Never has been a rivalry, basically. You know, I'm sort of still a Mansfield Town supporter through and through, I've supported since I was 10 years of age. Never been any rivalry whatsoever, we play our football now at Step 5, as you know, grassroots football, and it's just great, when we're, as I say, looking forward to this big game on Saturday.
Well, you say looking forward to it, then, ex-Mansfield Town, I think the Boston United boss is Adam Murray, a former player and boss there, and I think there's some ex-Stag players in their side as well, isn't it?
Exactly. I think in total, with the lads that actually play for us and the lads who play for Boston, I think there's 11 players who at some point have played for Mansfield Town.
So it's going to be a big handshakes after the game, but I'm sure plenty of passion during it. Yeah,
I'm sure it will be. We'll look, as I say, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a massive game. For a club that sort of, as I say, was only formed in 2012, to actually be playing a ex-Football League side is, a dream come true.
Swampy, I think you've got a question.
Just looking at the record, in fairness, up to this moment in time, 2-1, 3-0 against Quorn, 4-0 against Dunkirk, and then the big game, Rushall Olympic, you get a draw at their place, then you go away. Sorry, you get a draw at your place and you go away from home and you win by 2-1. That's a huge, huge result for you. You've got to be really proud of the lads. And equally, are you expecting to, do one over Boston, or are you content with whatever happens? Because you've had some great results so far in this competition.
I think whatever happens, for a club at Step 5 to get to the third qualifying round is a fantastic achievement. We did exactly the same thing last year. Got to the qualifying round and were narrowly defeated by Stamford. But going back to the last game against Rushall Olympic, it was an absolutely fantastic performance from the lads in the second game. You talk about players and who would you choose as man of the match? Well, that particular game, to be quite honest with you, all 11 players were sort of man of the match. You just could not sort of choose. One particular player.
I can appreciate that. And also, the one thing to bear in mind, I know Dave's going to have a question for you shortly. What a great youth system you've got, the football club itself. It's all based upon the youth, isn't it? And all the groups, community groups based within Mansfield that are at this football club now. You're going to be very proud of that achievement in such a short space of time.
Oh, yeah, well, I think we've got eight or nine sort of like youth sides, which basically play under the umbrella of sort of AFC Mansfield, and for clubs at this level, it's all about sort of bringing the kids through, and hopefully at some time in the future they may be able to play for the first team.
And to be fair, this has got to be your biggest game, Andre, so far, has it?
It's the biggest game in the club's short history, without a doubt. Yes.
Yeah.
Without a doubt it is. As I say, it's just amazing. I would imagine we'll have, you know, between sort of 500 and 600 people here on Saturday. You know, it's a bit unfortunate that Mansfield Town have got a game sort of against Notts County on Saturday. But that does kick off at 1 o'clock, though, so I'm sure there'll be a few down here, you know, getting down here for about 3:10.
For me, this is what the competition's all about. It's I find this stage of the FA Cup better than when it becomes quarter-final, semi-final, really. But this is what's... And you're about to find out that... that your players actually can step up. It's 90 minutes, over 90 minutes. You can bridge that gap, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say, you know, we've sort of had a good sort of start in the league as well. You know, fantastic cup run. And I'd say if it comes to an end on Saturday, it comes to an end on Saturday. But I can assure you, you know, the manager will have all the players fired up, you know, for the game this coming Saturday. And let's sort of hope we can sort of do a little bit of giant killing.
Your manager could go to the pub Saturday morning. He won't need to say anything to them, Andrew. It's the one game that they will be self-motivated, believe me.
Well, exactly. But good luck. Exactly. You know, they don't need motivation plays out for this one. Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. You know, they're all sort of up for it, all sort of geared up. And I'd say Saturday can't come soon enough.
Sure.
Well, we mentioned the manager there, Rudy Funk. He's your manager. He's a bit of a celebrity as well, isn't he?
He's a bit of a character. Yeah, he's Romanian by birth. He's actually sort of done managed a few clubs locally, but I suppose the biggest club he's managed was Scarborough. When Scarborough were actually in the Northern Counties, he got them promoted out of the Northern Counties into the Evo Stick League. And yeah, he is a real character. Yeah.
And what about longer terms for the plans for the club?
Longer terms for the club? You know, we'd love to actually sort of see the club promoted sort of this year. You know, step five football is probably one of the hardest leagues to get out of, you know, because only one team gets promoted. So basically, you've got to win the league to actually get promoted. But all that's changing this year, you know, with the national league system. National league system's changing. So basically, two teams can probably get promoted this year, which gives you the best opportunity for a long, long time.
So, as chairman of the club, can you enjoy Saturday?
I certainly will enjoy. It'll be busy. It'll be busy. You know, we'll have a lot of people here, and at this level of football, the chairman actually sort of does some manual work, like probably on the turnstile or selling programmes. So yes, it'll be busy. But yes, I'm really looking forward to it.
And have you got one of those really big keychains with loads of keys on it, like a jailer?
You could say so. I think mine's got about 15 on it.
Good stuff. That's non-league through and through. That's what the fans don't always see. As you say, chairman on the turnstiles. I wouldn't get that many of those in the Premier League, I don't think.
You don't at all.
Really appreciate your time, Andrew. It's been fantastic once again catching up with you, and we'll follow the story again. And wish you good luck at the weekend.
Yeah.
But thank you for your time. And
Thank you very much, Dan. Go and get those floodlights on.
Bye. That's a proper non-league story, isn't it, David? You were saying that's what the FA Cup's about this round.
It is, yeah. It really is, and we get a story, I guess, every year, and they always make you smile. I mean, so you're talking about chairman, and I remember when I was at Wimbledon, Eric Samuelson, who still is the chairman, used to park the cars. He would actually park the cars in a car park. And I remember one day, a well-known name, I'm not going to give his name, was complaining about where he had to park. And Eric said to him, do you want to speak to the chairman about it? and the guy actually says, no, it's okay, I'll just go in. But to this day, Eric said he'd have loved him to go, yeah, actually, I want to speak to your chairman. Because Eric went, yeah, you're speaking to him now. That's your place, and see you later. Do you know what I mean?
On this game in particular, I mean, Boston at the moment aren't doing very brilliantly well in National League North. AFC Banfield are having, obviously, a good season so far. good time to play them. I mean, Boston obviously haven't got the football league to concentrate, so they'll be wanting to try and do one over them. And as you say, 11 players have played for either or team. But it'll be an intriguing, competition. It'd be good if they can get a replay out of it, because obviously the money's important. The gates are shared, and for both clubs, in fairness, but especially for AFC Mansfield, that money's important to get back into the youth, get back into the setup that they've got there. And it should be a good game of football. But again, there could be an upset there. That maybe will be upset as well.
I just think that, you know, Adam Murray, the Boston manager, he won't be looking forward to this, Swampy. It's one of them banana skins that you, no matter if you win, you still don't win. Do you know, it's one of them days that you only lose. Now, don't get me wrong, come Sunday, if you're in the hat, then that's fine. But he'll be apprehensive about it, because it's away from home. It'll be facilities that won't be as good as they're used to, so they'll have to be motivated as players. And because you know, AFC Mansfield players, it's their biggest game probably ever. So and I've been on both ends of it, and I'm telling you, as the Boston manager will be thinking, I just want to get this one over and done with.
I think you're dead right. We had the same with Paramore, Handsworth Paramore, a couple of weeks ago. We went to their place, and Carl, win, lose, he was on a high to nothing, because there were three divisions below us, 54 places. And, you know, we won nil up, should have maybe made it three or four. They equalised at the 89th minute, take it to Broadhurst Park. And, we do a job there. We win by 6-2. But it could have been, as you rightly say, it's very difficult for managers of higher league clubs going to a lesser league club with different facilities and so on and so forth, and having to motivate them at the same time. They're on a high into nothing regards. You've experienced it yourself with the clubs that you've been, so you know exactly how it feels. And it's probably not one of the worst feelings. To be the underdog's probably always the best thing to be.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You're listening to the Non-League Football Show. Find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. Okay, so way back in 2010, one man's pre-season trip to watch QPR on their South West England pre-season tour had a dramatic change on the profile of non-league football. Enjoying that special something that non-league fans have in abundance, the concept of Non-League Day was born. This coming month, on the 7th of October, it's happening all over again. Non-League Day 2017 coincides with another international break for the pro game, and some big league games and also FA Trophy ties for those in the non-league game. So a great time to bring more of potential fans into the fold. To tell us more, founder of Non-League Day himself, it's Mr. James Doe. Good evening, James.
Hi there.
So I do recall conversations in that first season of Non-League Day. We all thought it was such a fantastic idea, we couldn't work out why we'd never thought of it. But I certainly, you know, I put my hands up, I certainly didn't expect it to be the phenomena we've got now. I mean, did you ever have that in mind?
No, not at all. I mean, I've said to other people, I just sort of launched it as a little bit of an event on Facebook among friends and just hope for the best. I can't believe it's quite got to where it is today. It is a bit of a shock.
Yeah, so social media was your friend. So, you know, maybe you should be putting a bid in towards Facebook and saying that you actually helped them become this massive organisation thanks to Non-League Day.
Yeah, if only. That'd be quite something.
If you need a manager for that, you know, or someone to write the letters, you know, I'm always around. But Non-League Day is all about celebrating non-league. So any suggested tactic for fans? You know, normally as a non-league fan, you get a little bit of ribbing maybe at those water cooler moments. Is there any tactics to make, you know, try and convince some mates to jump on board and get down to a non-league ground this Non-League Day?
Well, I mean, personally, you know, just getting to a game is the best thing. The best thing about non-league football I've probably discovered is the level of access you get to, you know, the game itself, the players, the referee, the directors, all that sort of stuff. It's a lot cheaper. Kids can get in. They can get close to the game. You can stand or sit wherever you want. It's primarily about access. But, you know, on top of all that, for Non-League Day specifically, You know, clubs up and down the country are doing loads of special things to make it that bit different from normal. You know, you've got sort of fancy dress. We've got reduced admission if you bring your dog at some clubs. You know, amazing things like that. And this year, more than ever, it seems to be the case that we sort of cracked the charitable angle. It's something we've not quite managed really successfully before, but we have an official charity, Prostate Cancer UK, who've been plugging away with us over the last 3 or 4 years. And loads of clubs seem to be really taking that on board this time, with loads of events all over the place to try and raise lots of cash. So, you know, it's sort of a day for the clubs to showcase themselves, make some money for themselves, but also for the non-league community to come together and also make some money for some good causes, for Prostate Cancer UK and also lots of other sort of local charities which the clubs love themselves.
The last 7 or 8 years has been absolutely superb. It's built and built and built. And we know a lot of people have spent a lot of time and energy, including yourself, to make it a success. This year, how much TV involvement have we had? Have we got the likes of the BBC and maybe BT Sport and the likes of Sky? Are they getting behind it as well, promoting it as they really should do? Because obviously football is a footballing family, regardless whether it's grassroots all the way up to the Premier League. Are they being involved this year? Are we getting the message out through those mediums as well?
Okay, well, I mean, I spoke to the BBC yesterday for an online interview, so they're definitely doing something. The big thing for us this year was actually being actively approached by the Premier League themselves. We've worked with them before, but we usually have to sort of remind them. But they came to us this year to say, you know, we want to work with you again. It's a great project, and we want to get our clubs, member clubs, to back you and support you as well, and getting the message out there. And the Premier League are also useful in, you know, approaching people like BT Sport and Sky and pushing our message for us. I mean, we do it ourselves, but, you know, it helps a lot if you've got the Premier League encouraging them as well.
Mm. Not off.
So if people were, you know, if they're involved with a club or if they're just fans, how can they find out more or pick up some ideas as to how they can get involved with Non-League Day this year, James?
Find your local game. We've got an interactive map on our website. The website's just nonleagueday.co.uk. And it's /map, and then you just put in your postcode or wherever you are, and all the games around will pop up. Also, if you follow our social media channels, but particularly Twitter, there's loads of stuff coming up on there. It seems minute by minute from clubs starting to reveal their plans. So our hashtag is Non-League Day, or just look at Non-League Day UK is our actual address. But there's lots of stuff coming up. I know from Prostate Cancer UK, they're working very closely with Vanarama and the National League, and a lot of stuff hasn't been revealed from them yet. So I'm expecting quite a lot to happen in the last week.
Well, we'll keep our eyes out on social media. And if you are just a fan of a club or involved in a club, make sure that you G your own club up this weekend so they can get something on for October the 7th, Non-League Day. Thank you very much again for your time, James, and we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Chaps, Non-League Day, it has had an impact. The approach that other people that aren't involved in Non-League, you know, how they see Non-League football now, you know, it's all organised, such a little a band of merry men and ladies and, you know, just communities coming together, really, isn't it?
But it's as you said, Tim, when James came up with it, everybody thought, well, why have we never ever thought of it ourselves? Because I think it's been unbelievably successful and has grown year on year, and hopefully will keep on growing. And if the Premier League are now involved and get in touch with James to promote it, it's only good for grassroots.
That's very good. I can't remember ever before. And now you sort of, many non-league clubs offer half price season ticket entry if you're a season ticket holder at, you know, a championship club or I can't remember that actually happening before Non-League Day. It's sort of Non-League Day almost sort of spurred everybody on into thinking, you know, slightly differently and in embracing the fans from the other world, as it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you got that situation now, haven't you? Where I think we've seen quite a number of Premier League high profile players that have come from the semi professional game, and let's not forget that's what it is. These are guys that are as dedicated as, you know, fully full pros with working jobs week in, week out. and the dedication is there and to be applauded by them all. What I'd like to see is that we've got this really great opportunity where we're showcasing semi-pro football. The shows on the television, there was Salford City a couple of seasons ago. There's one with Jamie Vardy doing it with, you know, players within the non-league circuit. But this is an opportunity where Match of the Day or Sky or whoever, on that day, there's no football. There's no league football. Why can't we have a non-league Match of the Day? Why can't the likes of Gary Lineker or the likes of... Of Dave Anderson and Tim or Caroline and myself host a show at the same time and showcase semi-professional football. Because we know it's the biggest... semi-professional football is the biggest participation sport in the UK, bar none. And therefore, once a year, when there's no Premier League football or whatever, showcase it. That's what the, you know, the BBC is about.
Idea.
That's what Sky's about. That's what maybe BT Sport's about. I know Channel 5 do, you know, the conference, the National League and so on and so forth. But there's an opportunity here so we can really capitalise upon it. And the likes of James doing all this great work, and he's done tremendous work, and they're starting to get on board now. But let's start thinking outside the box. Get them involved even more. Get cameras down there once a season. The amount of money in football is overflowing. Utilise it and let the semi-pro game be showcased, and we might get an extra 10, 15, 20 or even 100 people at certain clubs throughout the season, so the money goes into grassroots football again.
Well, we know that some of the powers of B do listen to this show, so get in touch. If you haven't got my number, it's at Non-League Show on Twitter, and we'll certainly help facilitate that. Books about football are ten a penny coming up to the end of the year, but few embrace non-league and even fewer are written from an insider's point of view. Step forward John Paul O'Neill, founder member of that there supporters' own club, FC United, back in 2005, and author of a new book about the club. Good evening, John Paul.
Good evening, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Now, I say it's about the club, but it's much more than that, this book, isn't it? It's more than just non-league as well. It's about football and the passion and, I guess, the reality of how those two things collide.
Yeah, it's about the whole sort of modern industry of football, if you like, from the Premier League down to non-league, because you've got the whole Manchester United angle, the takeover with the Glazers, and then the creation of FC United and everything that stemmed from that, with the club rising from the Northwest Counties currently to the Conference North.
And it has been a great story, but it's full of facts as well, isn't it? You know, you were there from day one, so you know, it's straight from the horse's mouth, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I wrote the article that proposed the idea of an FC United being created in the event of the Glazers taking over Manchester United. That appeared in Red Issue 3 months before the takeover, and then when the takeover actually went through, where to decide whether to go for it and actually try and attempt to create this club from nothing. And we did so. I set up the steering committee of a group of what became 16 of us. It was a lot smaller when it was first formed. But and it just went from there. We didn't have a clue how we'd go about it, but we just talked to people, talked to the North West County League, talked to the Unibond League at the time also. And just sort of winged it, I think is the expression. But we were in a position to be able to wing it, if you like, because of the quality of people we had involved.
And sorry, John Paul, it's Dave Anders. And I obviously watched AFC Wimbledon sort of progress, and I was there myself, and watched it from the inside out. And it's a real... You know, it's they've got their own amazing story. But for me, I'm always keen, and I've asked them guys about it. But when you thought about forming this side, this FC United team, in your mind, where was it going? Was it ever going to end up? Because it's become an unbelievable success story. But in your mind, where did you feel it was going to go?
Well, initially, what was in my head was that this would sort of promise people that if the Glazers took over and they wanted to carry on the protest, that we would give them this club to go and watch rather than just being lost to watching Manchester United being lost touch in football over the weekend. So the first the foremost thing was bringing in enough finance, enough sort of foundations that the club would be able to last that first season, because as long as we lasted that season, where it went from there was up to the people who became a part of it ultimately. So yeah. And they could take it wherever they wanted from there. But beyond that, I in my head at the time, back in 2005, I thought we would naturally be a Conference North club where the club is at the moment. Possibly with the right moves, with the right back in, it would become a Conference club. But sort of Conference, lower Conference, Conference North, I thought that would become its natural position over time.
I mean, obviously, you know, I know JP and I've known him since the inception of FC and before that, in fairness as well. And the question would be in regards to the book, JP, why now? Why write a book that actually isn't too complimentary about, in the latter part of the last two or three years, about what's happened to FC United and Manchester? Was it a book written based upon the fact that, as a founder of the football club, as a person who muted the idea, who got everything the ball rolling together with 16 other people and had done a tremendous job, was then actually thrown out of the football club and was refused membership of the football club, had to go to arbitration to get your membership back? Was there a little bit of getting things back on people, or was it a true representation of what needed to be said, certainly about the latter two or three years of FC United of Manchester?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there.
Well, you know me.
Well, why now? But basically, why now is because there was this deal was on the table and people were getting off the rank by the publishers. And I found out about, you know, do a good job of writing the book. And it was big part of it would be my story anyway, so I would have to have input into it if anyone was doing a decent job on it. So I may as well have done it myself. So I put myself in a position where I met the publishers and explained this to them, and they decided to go for it. So I ended up writing the book. You have to remind me, what was the other question?
Well, the other question, the other question was based upon why now, and obviously with the fact that, you know, You were actually refused membership by the previous board and the CEO of the football club, or the general manager.
Why now? Also, I think the turmoil of the last 2 years is sort of the club's reached a natural conclusion whereby a very good story can be told from the foundation of the club to where it's at now, and that's essentially what the publishers picked up on. With all the strife and the turmoil that was going on last year, that's what motivated them to look for someone to write the story. I mean, in terms of how the story that's been told, you've got to do it as it happened. You can't sugarcoat it or leave bits out. You're not going to tell the entire 12 years worth of the club's history, because there's just not space in the book for that. But so things have to be left out to a certain extent. But every major issue I've put in there was for good or bad. There's people who are friends of mine who were fallen out over the way the club's gone. But I've tried to give everyone as fair a hearing as they deserve, or as I see them deserving. Obviously, I'm writing it, so there's going to be my bias in there to a certain extent. But I've tried to eliminate that as much as I can. But the story that I'm telling takes a certain path anyway, which is that the club was being badly run, and a second revolution was necessary to give the club a chance of improving and surviving even. So that's the bias. If you look at it, that's the story I'm telling. So that's the bias that's in there. But beyond that, I think I've not heard anyone who's read it say, oh, you were out of order by saying this, or you're out of order by saying that. They've all sort of said, I didn't think you'd be so magnanimous in part. So that's the feedback I've had.
So good learnings for fans of every league, non-league club as well, though, JP, because is that probably everybody involved in their club, or every fan of every club, maybe wants to be a bit more involved in their club than maybe they can get. But there's learnings of the highs and the lows of how non-league clubs grow and shrink again in this book. So is it a definite Christmas read then for all of us?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing with FC have had a lot of internal trouble over since 2015, but you know that's going to come at some point. Whether it was 5 years earlier, whether it could have been put off till 5 years late, it was going to come eventually. You just don't have a continuous everyone's friends, everyone getting on, the no arguments, the club rising to the divisions. There's going to be setbacks. Whether it's a football club, a business, a charity, whatever it might be, you're going to get that in organisations, aren't you, with people, with strong personalities. So it was always going to come at some point. And just because it's happened, it doesn't mean, FC United's not working, the fan ownership model's not working. It is working because it was the fan ownership model which has brought it back round and put things right to the degree they have been put right so far. So, you know, people looking at it saying, FC United, we shouldn't really go down that route. I don't think the trouble we've had is an indication of that. The trouble we've had is an indication of what happens. It's life, it's reality. That's the way things go.
I think the one thing JP is certainly true is of a fan-owned football club, we've had the opportunity to be able to change it for ourselves. Other football clubs have seen go disappear slowly and slowly and slowly without being able to do anything. FC United have had that opportunity to be able to change things. You were massively influential at the very beginning in 2005. You also been influential in 2015 with trying to organise and get people motivated to realise the financial troubles of the way the club was going. And in that respect, supporters themselves that are fan-owned have been able to achieve and change, as you rightly say, the second revolution. And listen, there might be another 10 or 20 revolutions in the history of FC United of Manchester or any fan-owned football club. But the beauty is we can change it for ourselves. And that is the one thing that you can turn around and say, I own a football club and we've changed it for the better, or maybe sometimes for the worse.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a big part of the problem that did develop was a lack of scrutiny by the supporters and the owners. But once that was refocused and people realised what was going on, it was them who changed it. It was the membership that changed it for the better. So, yeah, that's what you're able to do if you own your football club. Whereas this, Blackburn or Blackpool or Leeds or whoever else whichever example you might take, when they're owned by a private ownership model, whether it's a company, whether it's a family like the Glazers or whoever, you don't get that input. The only input you can have is spending your money over the gate or not doing it. It's just an economic boycott. That's the only thing you can do.
Well, if any non-league fans want to spend some of their money, it's available at all good booksellers now. It's Red Rebels, The Glazers and the FC Revolution. Thank you very much for your time, JP. Best of luck with the book and hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, now we all love a made in non-league story on this show, and last week we name-checked a couple of players previously under the wing of Mr. Anderson, who are currently making big names for themselves in the programme. One of whom we have tried a couple of times to attempt onto this show, but his profile is now so high that he's a tough catch, even for a goalkeeper. But we love it when players are still proud of their non-league roots, and therefore pleased to have on the line current Burnley FC goalkeeper Nick Pope. Good evening, Nick.
Good evening.
Now, I say made in non-league, but I think you were with Ipswich until you were 16?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I left Ipswich at 16 and got released and went into West Suffolk College and Bury Town FC set up. And I spent 3 years there.
And that's when you were then sort of fell into non-league, Bury Town, and before you were, I think you were picked up by Charlton, and then some league spells, and you ended up under the wing of Miss Ramsey, and I'm sure is itching to talk to you.
Yeah, correct. The first thing I did was go online to Harrow, and that's where I came across Le Gaffer.
Yeah, Poppy, it's I'm delighted for you. It's funny situations when you, because I didn't realize I hadn't been watching the game. Just to let the listeners know, I wasn't watching the game. And Jason Goodliffe texted me, who was my assistant manager, and said, "If you're not watching the game, get it on. Poppy's in goal." And that's how I found out about Nicky making his debut. But now, listen, congratulations from all of us. But the difference between running out at Harborough, Nick, or Bury Town, as opposed to running out at Anfield, maybe you'd like to put that into a few words for us.
Massive difference. Obviously, you used to get a couple hundred people down at Harrow, and then Anfield, you're in front of 50,000. It's just a different ball game. Obviously, just adrenaline. Obviously, firstly, when I came off the bench against Palace, like, you get a massive adrenaline boost, and I came on kind of 10 minutes before half time. So it's quite nice to get through them 10 minutes and kind of sit in the dressing room and kind of gather your thoughts. And so as a goalie as well, when you come off the bench, it's quite a rare thing and something that's quite hard to prepare for. So just it's just the atmosphere, you know, the feel is amazing, especially to have my Premier League debut at Anfield was something I'll definitely never forget.
No, and I think as well, Nick, that keeping your focus on the actual game, you know, I suppose they're both can be, if you're playing in front of 200 people and someone shouts you, you pick it out and you can take your attention away from what you should be doing. And I'd imagine in front of 53,000, it's very difficult to keep yourself focused into this is a game of football, focus on the pitch. Does it pass you by, Nicky? You know, is it one of them you have to go home and watch it on Match of the Day?
A little bit, as in, like you say, when there's 200 people and they're literally 3 yards behind the goal, you do kind of hear every bad word or every word they've got to say either way. So, to be fair, at Anfield, I kind of had that because I had 50,000 screaming at me for time wasting and got me booked after 50 minutes. So,
yeah.
I heard them as well, to be fair.
and last one for me, and it's a delight to talk to you. What did non-league teach you that you've taken forward, if anything, into where you are now? Tough question.
Lots of it. I think it was so beneficial to my career to play all them games. Obviously, from 16 to 19, after I got released from Ipswich, I played probably 120 or 150 games in 3 years across different levels and for different teams, like, you know, county teams and reserve games and first team games for Bury Town. So to go and play them games and, you know, play with men and men's football for a young goalkeeper, I think was a massive thing. And really important to, you know, play alongside, you know, men and, you know, where they're playing for a living as well. It's not just a kick around with your mates when there's something, there's 3 points to play for. I think it definitely adds something and something that I definitely think is a massive part of how I've got to where I am today.
Yeah, good lad. Well, listen, I've hogged the interview, Poppy, but I don't care. It's great to talk to you, son, and regards to your family.
Well, listen, Nicky, it's Swamp here from FC Radio. First of all, congratulations, and, you know, I'm sure Dave was very influential in the dressing room with you. The question I want to ask is... As a 16-year-old lad being released by a footballing league club, and the side probably would have been a Premier League club, to now, what advice would you give? Because obviously you played for Ipswich, you've been at Charlton, you were at Harrow under Dave, you've been at Welling, Cambridge, Aldershot, York, and then Bury, and now you are at the pinnacle of anyone's career. You're playing in the Premier League of football in the British Premier League. What advice would you give to any young kid who gets released at that young age to try and carry on and develop? What advice would you give?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say, like, for me, I dropped down to college level to play football and to try and enjoy the game again. So it wasn't something I was really doing when I left Ipswich. And when you get released, I knew I was going to get released. I had that feeling. I wasn't good enough, so you don't really enjoy your football when you're kind of going through that kind of period. So first thing I really wanted to do was try and enjoy football again and go and play, you know, with mates. And massive thing is to play games. Like I said, the games I played in them 3 years are a massive part. Rather than sitting on the bench, like whatever level you get to, you know, you've got to play the games, 40, 50 games a year. That's where you really learn your trade, I think. So I'd say that's a massive thing. I was really lucky that obviously West Suffolk College, where I went, was, you know, a really good setup with, you know, the college football and link with Bury Town with Richard Wilkins running the setup. That was a massive part of my development as well, being involved in that.
And now you get to watch yourself on Match of the Day. I mean, that's everybody's dream, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. That's what everyone used to watch, or everyone still does watch, you know, growing up. You know, you stay up late to watch all the goals. So that was a massive thing for me, something I'm really proud of.
And your lads are now, what, 4 games unbeaten in the Premier League? You just keep doing what you're doing? Is that the way?
I think so, yeah. Just, you know, I'm building blocks every week now, you know, all new experiences for me. So it's only going to make me, these experiences only going to make me better and hold me in good stead for the future. So just taking it game by game at the minute. Obviously coming into the Premier League, it's a whole new ball game, a whole new level to what I've played before. So it's just taking it game by game and, you know, learning every week and, you know, taking the experiences on forward.
And just, sorry, Nick, I want to come in again on the sort of the other side of it, you know, because I mean, you're not a quiet lad, but you're quite reserved, and in well, compared to me, you are. but I'm saying,
so is Bruce Grubbler.
Yeah, so I'm saying, sort of, obviously, get noticed in the public eye now when you're out and about. How have you felt? How have you dealt with that? Has that been okay for you?
Yeah, I've been 100% been fine. Obviously, I think I'm quite grounded, to be honest.
You're very grounded.
I've been kind of on both sides of the fence. You know, I've been in football and in the academy system, and then to come out of it, I think, is, you know, you kind of, it pegs you back in a few ways. So to be on both sides of the fence like that, I think I kind of realise how lucky I am now, and, you know, just, and in football, if you start taking liberties, you know, you can get shot back real quick. So it's definitely something that I want to do, you know, keep feet on the ground and concentrate game by game, because as soon as you take your foot off the pedal, it's, you know, football's ruthless. You can get pegged back really quickly and, you know, and you're starting again.
Yeah, top man, son. Good luck.
Good to hear. Now, are you still in contact with any of the lads that you played in non-league? We spoke about non-league day coming up October the 7th. Where I think you got the international break. I don't think you quite made the call up this time round. Maybe next one. But are you going to be going, you know, maybe watching a non-league game October the 7th? No pressure.
I won't be this international break. I was the last one. I went to watch my brother play at Stone Town. Cool. So his goalkeeper there, Josh Pope. So I've already been to watch him this season. So if I go to a non-league game, it's normally there at the minute.
Good stuff. Well, we thank you for your time, and keeping in touch with your non-league roots. So we wish you well for the weekend, Sunday game this weekend, isn't it? So slightly not many Sunday games in non-league, so it was probably slightly different. Preparations, but thanks again for your time, and yeah, hopefully stay in contact, and we'll look forward to that England call up.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
I'll tell you one thing, lads, which is interesting, and it grounds players massively. If they go back to playing with friends, going back to playing with the peers, because the one thing out of the game that we miss is that kids that are in from 8 years of age that get taken by football league clubs or Premier League clubs. Playing the bubble until they're 16 years of age. They're not allowed to go out and play with their friends. They work with their football clubs. Going out playing with your friends, it makes you a better person. It makes you the person you are, and you can hear from him. He stepped back down to enjoy football, because there's so many players that have been binned at 16 or binned at 18, and they've fallen out of love with the game. Well, they go and have a kick about with their mates, and all of a sudden, they know why they're enjoying it again, because it's all about enjoyment and playing the game and enjoying the game. And he's done exactly that, and he's playing the Premier League. And it gives hope for everyone, really.
It does. He's a great lad, Nick. You know, he says grounded. He makes me laugh. He was such a grounded lad, and he was on a mission. You know, he's got a real steeliness about him that's quiet. You know, but we had no doubts. I remember like saying to Jason Goodliffe, both of us saying, I've said on the show a couple of years ago when it, you know, at the time when we had him on loan, that I expect him to go all the way. I'm not trying to be clever now. I think what I liked about him was he only did about 3 months with us on loan, because that's all we could have him. And then about 6 or 7 months later, we played Bromley away, and he's from that sort of neck of the woods, he's a Charlton, and he turned up to watch the game, you know, just out of the blue, came and had a quick sort of coke with me, and just one of them kids. He's not a kid now. He's a man, but you want him to go on and achieve what he's achieved, you know. But I would like to say we've had John Paul on, and now we've a guy called Pope. Is there a theme going on here? Is there?
Well, we've got Brendan Rodgers coming up next.
I think on that note we should end. You know, we have just been discussing that the football's all about enjoying it and having some fun, so we don't need to get into any political conversations.
But, me and Swampy will do that offer.
and we also need to just finish these shows. Really, they're getting longer every week. So that's it for this week. Thanks to Dave, Swampy, and all our guests and everybody for listening. Find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, also on iTunes, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put our podcast on your website, check out our website, www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. Thank you, guys, and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA